Happy Memorial Day. So, of course, on this Memorial Day, as Candy so beautifully read earlier, thank you, Candy. Yeah. We are honoring our military veterans, such as herself and Mike, our Sunday coordinator, and many others. If you serve in the military or have, would you stand and let us honor you? Thank you. Thank you for your service. And thank you, of course, to all those who we have made their transition that we love. We honor them today, too. And today in our message, really what we're talking about is also remembering our spiritual identity, remembering the truth of who we are. So thanks to all of you online who maybe, I hope you stood in your living rooms if you're serving in the military, and those of you outside. So one pathway to this true essence of who we are, to our spiritual identity, is by being authentic, right? Being authentically ourselves, even our relative personality selves, being authentically who we are, and bringing what it is that we have to bring in all the capacity and the wholeness of who we are. And one person who did that really well made her transition this week that I want to honor, rock icon Tina Turner. She was authentic, she was talented, she was inspirational in my mind, and maybe you have other ways that you might express the traits that you would want to portray of hers. Angela Bassett played her in the movie about her life, What's Love Got to Do with It? And Angela said that through her courage to tell her story, through her commitment, through her determination to help others, that Tina Turner showed those who live in fear what a beautiful future they could have, filled with love and compassion and freedom and what it could look like. Tina showed us more than we could have ever asked, Angela said. She gave us more than we ever could have asked. She gave us her whole self. And that's really the calling, isn't it? To bring forward our whole self, our whole being, all aspects of our being into life and engage in that way. Then life becomes like full of fiery passion and excitement and joy and even quiet moments, right, of joy. It doesn't always have to be this big out loud expression, although it may be that too. But it's both. It's whatever is authentically true in the moment of who we are and how we're meeting it. So what would it look like for you if you were to give your whole self to the world? All of it, your whole self. Do you do that? Or do you hold back some pieces and parts? Or maybe even the very best part of yourself you hold back. Many of us do. Many of us cover up, hold back, play small. And so it is for us to ask ourselves, in what ways am I doing that? Am I blocking the light and the love and the truth and the joy for coming through? And how can I begin to unblock that way? To stop it, in other words. And underneath it all, then, the question becomes, who are you really? Let's explore that today, your true self. Are you in? All right, very good. So let's start at the beginning by setting the record straight from your birth. All right? Was anybody ever told you were born of original sin? Or you heard it in, not maybe personally, but you heard it in the culture and your religious upbringing, so you figured as a human being, I guess that includes me, born of original sin. So this idea, of course, is that humans come in inherently sinful, mistaken in some way. Maybe you learned this from an authority figure, through church, parents, school, whatever, an adult who you were young and impressionable and trusted, and so you took this in, drank this thing in that says that you are born of sin. So our biggest spiritual work on our journey is usually to unlearn the untruths that were given to us, right? Because by unlearning, by freeing ourselves, then the truth can come forward for us. So So let's take a look even further back to the beginning of the beginning of all humanity and our story in our culture and in our Christian heritage, of course, comes from Genesis. There are creation stories from all around the world in all different kinds of spiritual traditions. And you might prefer, instead of thinking of a creator and a source, that the divine intelligence of the universe initiated the evolution of all life forms. So that we can just kind of clean up that conflict that about creation and evolution. It doesn't have to be a conflict. It's about that spark, right? That spark, that idea, that blueprint of you that was initiated and then evolved into who you are today. Pretty magnificent. Something powerful must have done that, created that, thought of that, called it in. And so in Genesis, the source creator says, as they're about to create humans, let us create them in our image. And so humans were created in the image and the likeness of spirit. And so then, after we were created, what did the source creator do? It said, it's good. You're good. You're good from the very start, all the way back from the beginning. You were not born needing to repent. You did not come in as a sweet little innocent infant with a sort of otherworldly eyes looking at your parents and need to purify yourself or to repent in any way. You came in instead in original blessing, in original virtue of the source, made in the image and the likeness of spirit. So this damaging church teaching sin, we could think of it as an acronym, self-imposed negativity, and then collectively taken self-imposed negativity. No wonder it's tough in life to slug it out, right? With some of these beliefs that still live on inside of us. And so the work, of course, is to get to what's true, what resonates for us. When I was growing up, there was a habit in my household that my mom and my sisters did and that I picked up. When we would make a mistake, we would get frustrated with ourselves and we would say, "What's wrong with me?" And it was just a common thing, right? So I didn't think any, I just picked it up. I was the youngest kid, I just started doing it too. Interesting, I never noticed my dad do it, but all the women in the house did it. And so years into Unity, I caught myself one day doing that, and I thought, wow, nothing's wrong with me. Nothing's wrong with my mom, nothing's wrong with my sisters, nothing's wrong with you. Let's stop saying that, because it's not true. And so it's based out of these teachings. And what we need to know is that, yes, we make mistakes. And that's really what sin means. Missing the mark, making a mistake. That's the literal meaning of it. And mistakes actually help us get closer to the source of our being, interestingly enough. Because as we make mistakes, right, we grow, we learn, we expand our capacity to forgive, we expand our capacity to have compassion. And all of that gets us closer to who we are in truth, to the expression of the divine essence that we are. So mistakes, not such a bad thing. As spiritual beings then coming into the world, we needed to have an ego to kind of, you know, learn how to navigate, right? We come into this physical body, into this physical world. It's all new. What do I do with this thing, this vehicle, and this very physical world? I'm a spiritual being. Remember, I'm made of light and love and purity, and I come and now I have form. Now I have what seems like limitations. So now what? So this developing ego to help us function in the world is really important, isn't it? But the thing about the ego is it's meant to be supported by spirit. It's meant to be in service to spirit. Where we go wrong is we think it's supposed to be in charge. we think it's supposed to be running the show. And then we forget we have a spirit at all. We forget we have this essence and power and presence and peace and joy and all this stuff to access. We just think that all we got is an intellectual mind and a physical body, and we better just, you know, do the best we can out there. And so it's that remembering once again. Because the ego, of course, will grasp for control. It'll get fearful and anxious. When we put it in the driver's seat, that's when it gets fearful and anxious. When we say, you're in charge, it's like putting the toddler in charge. And then just saying, figure it out, you know, run the household, see how it goes, you know. And it does the best it can. Brenly and I, years ago, had a really sweet dog named Chaos. Be mindful of what you name your pets. So after we moved one time, a couple of service people came to the house on different occasions, and Chaos's behavior became more erratic, unpredictable, and actually dangerous. On both occasions, he greeted the service person by running right up to him and biting them. And I thought, what is the reason for this? And realized it was because we, Brenly and I, had not been centered in our own power, in our own new home, in this new space, to let him know that he was safe, that he didn't need to patrol the house, he didn't need to be responsible for everybody's safety. But it was a big miss on our part that we weren't doing that. We weren't paying attention. Maybe we were caught up in some of the chaos of moving. And so it's that process that when we take charge, when we ground in our spirit, we let our ego know it can do its job and be at ease. So, you know, it's all about fear, isn't it? You know the saying, false evidence appearing real is what fear stands for. And so it's that recognition that fear is what gets in our way, and that when we are in that place, we can move to access and live from the divine instead. Author Sonia Choquette likens the ego also to a barking dog. You know, because that's really the moral of the story of Chaos, is that if your ego is showing up like a barking dog or a biting dog, that it's time to recenter, right? It's time to ground. So I want to invite you into an exercise to close your eyes if you wish, and just move to your heart for a couple of breaths. And imagine, if you will, that your ego is a barking dog. Let the image of that dog arise in your heart, in your mind's eye. You might notice what kind of dog it is, what colors, what it looks like, and how it's behaving. Then I invite you to give the dog a name. And now, if you will, shift your attention to the spirit of your being. Taking a few breaths there. And how does your spirit show up as you behold your spirit? What are some of the characteristics of your spirit? And invite you to name your spirit. And now, centered in that spirit, let's call the barking dog to us. With spirit in charge, how does the barking dog behave? And notice how you feel when you're centered here in your spirit. Look around you. How does your life look? How does it feel from this place? And when you're ready, I invite you to come back into this place. From that I am within us all springs forth a unique expression, your soul's expression. Some ways that you have been called to be here on earth, to show up, to share your gifts. And a lot of times we don't even know what our gifts are really until we're called into them, till we're called to be them and to express them in some way. Such was the case for Moses. Remember, Moses was out with his father-in-law's Jethro's flock tending the sheep when he noticed that this bush was on fire. And as he was watching the bush, he noticed that it wasn't consuming itself. It just kept blazing and blazing. And he went to look a little closer, like, what the heck is that? Why? And as he was getting closer, he hears someone calling him out of the bush. Moses, Moses, come closer, come closer. Moses says, here I am. And stops there because he's not quite sure what's going to happen when he gets closer to the bush. And out of the bush is expressed, I'm the God of your ancestors that's speaking to you. Take off your sandals, you're on holy ground. So Moses takes off his sandals and he's there to hear what the God of his ancestors and himself, his father, has to say. And so God says, I hear the cry of the people from the Israelites from Egypt who are enslaved. I hear the misery and the pain, and I want you to free them. I'm going to send you to the Pharaoh to free them. And Moses does one of these, who, me? Moses stuttered. Moses was a shepherd. He didn't feel equipped to go and free all of the people from Egypt and go direct to the Pharaoh. And so he wasn't quite sure that God had the right person. He continued to try to question, but God wasn't having it. Trust me, I'll be with you, is basically the answer he got. So Moses says, he realizes he's not going to get out of this. So he says, okay, so I go down to the Israelites and I'm supposed to tell them who sent me? What's your name? And God says, I am who I am. I am who I am. And then God says, just tell him the I am sent you. And this is my name forever, the name you shall call me, generation to generation, the I am. But we don't often use that when we talk about, we don't often say the I am when we're talking about God. But that, of course, is our second principle. This idea that the I am is in us, that it is the very essence of God. It is the name of God from generation to generation. It's that idea that humankind is inherently good and has, of course, the spirit within. And knowing that the I am is the highest part of us, consider for a moment how we use the I am, what we follow those two words with, what we say about ourselves frequently. Remember the old admonishment, don't take God's name in vain? That would be it, right? It's how we speak of the I am. So I'm actually giving this talk for myself today, and I'm hoping that you get something out of it. I realized this week, I was like, I had this day where I was just so exhausted, and I was just like, it was like, felt like pushing a boulder uphill all day. And a couple of people asked me how I was, and I was like, oh, I'm so tired. And, you know, it was afterwards that I realized, like, how does that serve? That doesn't really serve. Now, you can be honest about the human temporary condition you're in. It's not about not being authentic. You can say, my body needs more rest today. My body's dragging a little bit today. But the I am, uh-uh. The I am doesn't get tired. The I am doesn't get sick. The I am is vitality and energy and wholeness and truth. And so if we leave that in its sacred space, in its sacred container, it's easier for us to be impeccable with our word, for one thing, and to be aligned with that truth and feel the power of it when we speak of it, not drain the power by using it in sloppy ways. And so it's that recognition that even by the way we speak can make a big difference in our grounding and centering in this truth and not forgetting so much who we are. So recalling our deepest selves, you know, there are these seemingly many selves of us, right? Many ways we show up. There's many roles we play in the world, and in those different ways that we might show up in relationship with people, we might behave and think and just feel in different ways, right? So it suddenly feels like there's all these little selves running around. But, you know, those are just sort of layers of the onion. And the truth is, as Eileen brought to our noon meditation this week, there's the deepest I. The deepest I. And that's really what we're after, is the deepest I, the truest self. And the surest way I have found to get there is through silence, through stillness. Even if it's just a few moments, even if it's just a breath now and then, a conscious breath or two to say, oh, okay, there I am. Here I am, ready to be called, ready to be of service, or just ready to receive whatever it is I need, comfort, love, truth, guidance. We'll know that we've arrived when we feel the peace, when we feel the wisdom, when we feel the joy of being connected to the truth of who we are. When we remember who we are present more to the joy of life. There's a story told by Jerry Braza in a book, Moment by Moment. It's a little adaptation of that. And in the story, there's a family getting ready to go off for the day. And Pat says to Jerry, I've got to run a bunch of errands this morning. I've got places to be. I've got an appointment. Can you take the kids? And Jerry says, oh, man, I already have a really busy day. I've got places to be, too. Oh, okay, fine. Hurry up, kids. Get in the car. We got to go. So the kids pile in, and Jerry's driving by looking at his watch continuously and thinking about all the moves he can make to cut off a little time. So he's saying to him, thinking to himself, oh, this person in front of me must be sightseeing. How am I going to get around them? And so when I have an opportunity, I'm going to cut over. And constantly looking at the GPS, why isn't the GPS rerouting me a faster way? Is there a shortcut? I think I knew of a shortcut. So in all these things, all this, you know, is happening. And then, oh, no, up they come to the railroad crossing. And he doesn't get through. The lights start flashing. The gate comes down. Now Jerry is beside himself, right? He's trying not to act up too much in front of the kids, so it's like it's all mostly happening mentally, except that his, you know, fingers are drumming very anxiously on the steering wheel while he continues to think about, as soon as he gets through, which shortcuts he's going to take and which ways he can go. And, you know, he's probably not breathing very fully, and there's all that going on, maybe a little beaded sweat on the brow, you know. And in all of that cacophony that's happening mentally, suddenly it gets interrupted with this sweet small voice from the back seat. Daddy, Daddy, we're so lucky. We get to watch the train go by. And everything melts away, right? That's how we shift into the truth, right? We get sometimes called out of it, all out of our busyness of mind. And in that present moment, we drop in and we touch the truth, fully there. And it's there that we want to dwell. It's there that we want to live. When we forget who we are, we show up anxious, we show up fearful, we show up stressed. When we remember who we are, we're present to joy. It's as simple as that. So how can we remember? What are some things that we can consciously do to start cutting to the core belief about who we are? Well, one thing is to ask the right question. Don't ask what's wrong with me, ask what's right with me. And actually write it down. I encourage us to make that a regular practice where we write everything down that's right with me. Imagine if you started every day and you wrote a list of everything that was right with you. How different things would go for you in that day, right? Feeling better, feeling good about yourself and about your life as you go out the door, knowing what's right with you helps us stay aligned. And then to see the I am, to make a conscious effort to look for it, to see the I am in others, in ourselves, to show up in that way. When we stop pushing through life, when we stop judging everything that doesn't suit us, we keep ourselves more open to that kind of seeing to the truth, the goodness in the life around us and within each other. And with practice, then a new habit forms where it's an expected thing. We expect to see the divine. We expect that when we engage with people, that's what we're going to be engaging with, was the very highest part of them, and therefore the very highest part of us coming forward. And with that expectancy and that habit, there's less and less of the kinds of things that drain the life and energy out of us as we move through life. And there's more and more of the Christ-like characteristics coming through for us when we remember. Actions flow from the center place. And so we show up in those ways that are centered in that place. When we act from our divine guidance, from our innate presence, when we remember, then everything becomes sort of natural out of that space. The old thoughts and beliefs, the things that were dragging us down, are replaced now with this newer, shinier way of being. We often put spiritual masters on pedestals, right? And so that is the place we will never reach, is what we often think in our minds. Yet spiritual masters, such as Jesus, said, "These things I do, and greater things shall you do." It just... The only difference, really, between Jesus and your favorite spiritual master or your favorite spiritual master and you is that Jesus and they never forgot. They always remembered who they were. That's the only difference. And so the remembering is all there is to this spiritual walk, in essence. It's and the more we practice, the less we forget. The more we remember, the more we dwell in that place. And life flows in a divine way from there. So if we keep up our I am remembrance practices, we will forget far less. So let's let this Memorial Day be all that it always is in its honoring and its reverence. And let it really also be a remembering of our spiritual truth of who we are. Let's move through our days recalling our deepest selves, remembering this very essence. I invite you to say this with me. Together, I recall my deepest self. I remember who I am. And so it is.